Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
We wanted to move into resiliency. I know it's a topic that I think is close to home for you, and just dive into that. So before we do, could you just maybe talk about what resiliency means to you, how you define it, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, where I would start is, I think there's two kind of levels. The first level, the main level that people get to, I would hope, is, you know, can you get through it when it gets hard, and maintain who you are? I think that's kind of the most basic thing. And then to me, there's a next level, if you can get to it, that's rarer, that's, can you love this moment even when it's hard?
Did you just drop the mic?
Yeah, that was it. That's what I think. That's how I define resilience.
That's so good. And Cass, you've had firsthand experience with being resilient. Would you be willing to share any of your story?
Yeah, of course. When I was 9 years old, woke up one morning and had this kind of shooting pain down my shin, unclear why. Tried to stand up, hurt even more. So I got a pair of crutches, thinking it was not a big deal. I went to the doctor and they were like, it's probably a hairline fracture or something. And then they did a bunch of tests and it was not a hairline fracture or anything else that showed up on tests. So I ended up being on those crutches for about 7 months. And within probably five or so, they hadn't figured out how to do anything about it. So they were like, you're probably just not going to be able to walk. And I disagreed with that assessment. So I decided I was going to walk on the last day of fourth grade with zero preparation. I decided about a week before. And it was terrifying, but I did it. And well, I kind of walked. I like hobbled around that day. It was like a hop. But it was the first time I put my foot on the ground in over half a year. And then I went back to physical therapy and relearned how to walk properly. The problem was that nothing had been fixed, so it still hurt. And then it hurt more because I was walking on it. And then I decided I wanted to be an athlete, which is
great,
very questionable decision. But I know, like I said, my mom was coach. I wanted to play volleyball since I was born, basically. And so within a few months of that, I started playing on my first team. And so as my career went, you know, it gets more physical and, you know, just harder on your body the farther you go. And so it just became, you know, I call it the pain ladder. Like I would go up a step in pain, kind of adjust to that, and then go up another rung. And then I got to college, and that's just, as you guys know, like so much harder on your body. And so it just jumped up a few rungs. And so it was just kind of this constant struggle as throughout my career, and especially in college and the national team, of just like, how much can I push this? How much pain can I take? Considering that I really want to be the best volleyball player that I can be. And it was me kind of testing those limits all the way up to the edge of them to go, okay, let's see where we can get to. And that led to, you know, a lot of difficulty in some ways. I don't want to overstate, like I loved all my time at Stanford and the national team, but it was really hard. And you know, not just the part where I had to go play volleyball, but the part where I'd like get to class and pay attention and all of that when you're in a lot of pain. So it was just something I had to kind of train myself around to figure out how to deal with as I went through that whole process, or I wasn't going to be a volleyball player. Like those were the two options.
Yeah. And have you gotten like an official diagnosis of?
I have not. I was diagnosed as a kid. Well, I couldn't walk with kind of a rare nerve disorder. When I went to Stanford, I hadn't seen a doctor in like 10 years because they couldn't find anything to help. I went back to the doctors at Stanford. They did all kinds of new tests. They thought they knew what's going on. They ended up undiagnosing me, and we never really got around to the re-diagnosing part. So it's currently still a medical mystery.
Love it.
How was your like pre and post practice different than maybe a player who doesn't have the pain you deal with?
I don't think pre is super different. Cause it's not like nothing really helps. So that's an issue. So it's not like I can go, okay, I'm going to go through this routine and that's going to make it better, or like stretch, but whatever. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, especially when it's a national team, like I just need to shut it down after practice or like on the weekend or whatever. I can't be going out and doing a whole lot if I'm in full training mode. I need to conserve all of that like time on my feet just for that practice setting.
How has your relationship with physical pain changed?
I think for the most part, like we just coexist in a lot of ways. Like there's just kind of an acceptance that this is a thing in my life. I would say the biggest thing that is different for me is that I understand that pain doesn't require a response. So a lot of the times, like you're doing something and that hurts and you just go, okay, I'm going to stop doing that. And that has very clearly not been my approach. So I think that's a kind of very linear way to look at it. And it's evolutionarily sound, right? Like if you got hurt when a bear was chasing you or something, like you needed to figure that out.
Avoid the bear.
Yeah, avoid the bear, or like tend to your wound before it got infected or whatever. And so that works really well for acute pain because you need to deal with it. It doesn't work very well for chronic pain because if you're just constantly reacting to the pain, then you just can't even live your life. And so I think decoupling those things to go, okay, this hurts, but I'm going to continue doing it anyway. Like this happened just the other day, this happened where I was going to go work out and I had my workout plan. I was like, this is the cardio I'm going to do. I had plans to do extra cardio and it happened to be like a kind of a high pain day. And I went to do my workout and did the extra cardio because that's what I had planned. And so I think most people, like the normal reaction, be okay, pain's high, that means I'm going to, you know, not do this. And I think just the ability to go, okay, pain's high, but I still want to do it because I have reasons for it. I think being able to do that in any given situation, and it doesn't just apply to physical pain, right? It applies to emotions. Like if you're angry, you don't have to respond to that. You know, if you're upset, you don't have to respond to that. There's a certain level, like a threshold that it goes over that you just don't really have a choice. But if you can kind of raise that threshold, then there is a lot more choice than we think there is when it comes to those emotions or feelings.
Seems like you've experienced a lot of challenges and been through a lot. I'm wondering, has there been any upsides? Do you see any things that you've gained through what you've experienced?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether or not I would have been physically a better volleyball player if I had a proper body. But I'm probably a better volleyball player in terms of kind of the mental side of the game because of it. You know, when I got to the national team and we were working with Mike Gervais and he was going over kind of the skills of resilience and focus and breathing and all of that, and self-talk and all of that. And I, you know, remember being in the weight room being like, wait, I use these. I've always, you know, I use breathing. I focus on, you know, my reps or my breath or whatever it is just to get through, you know, get through this as pain spikes. And so all of those skills I've been building since I was a little kid. And, you know, I think that directly relates to, you know, getting through tough workouts or practices or getting over a loss or serving match point or all of the things that, you know, you have to do as an athlete. So yeah, I think in many ways it's increased my kind of self-awareness and, ability to kind of regulate myself, which has led to probably a lot of my success. And then it's also made it a lot harder. So I think it weighs on both sides.
Do you feel like you try to maximize the time you get? Like, it's like, well, I have this window, so I'm going to, you know, make the most of each rep I get. Does that play a role?
What do you mean maximize?
I don't know. I could see like, if I know, like I can do a double day or I can get, you know, I could do setting reps for hours. Like you kind of can be mindless. Right. And it seems like with what you have, you're limited with the amount of reps you can get. So I mean, I guess that plays into the mental game you're talking about. Like, you're going to be mindful and maybe appreciate every rep you get. I don't know. Maybe I'm off there.
Yeah, I think in some ways, I think it was the biggest deal when I was at Stanford because I was playing multiple positions. And so it was really like, okay, I have to get in extra reps and all of that. And at one point, John was literally like, no, you can't do that. So I would actually go in. At one point, they cut me off from jumping for a while. And so I would go in and just get mental reps. Like, I would go into the gym, walk through approaches, and just go over, okay, if the ball is set here, where would I hit it? If the block were here, and play games in my head, which I think actually really helped me when I started hitting again. So in some cases, yeah. And then just, you know, I think the other thing is, like, everybody has bad days. My bad days are, like, pretty bad. But everybody's going to have them. And so if I'm trained and able to come in on those days and be focused, I think that just allows me to get the most out of what I'm doing in practice.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't you ever quit? Like, or do you ever regret, like, continuing with it and putting yourself through pain?
No, I love playing volleyball. I've always loved playing volleyball. I think the thing that really helped me was, you know, it kind of forced me into having some really honest conversations with myself of, you know, especially as I got to college, going, okay, you know, where am I at right now, both in my career, you know, in my position and whatever, and the pain level, and what do I think this next phase is going to look like given my career and my position and all that, and how much more am I pushing this? You know, am I going hard in the weight room? Like, all of these things that are going to cause spike up. And then sitting myself down and going, okay, is that worth it to you? Is this really something you want to do? And as long as I can honestly answer that yes, then I was all in. And I think there's a lot of people, I've been in gyms with people, you guys, I'm sure, have been in gyms around the stand with people who haven't had that conversation, who you can see them struggling every day. Like, is this where I want to be? Is this what I want to be doing? Do I really want to be putting all of my work and all of myself into this thing? And I never had that. I was always, when I went into the gym, I was like, I know why I'm here. I know what it means to me to be here. And I've already decided that I'm all in. So having to kind of periodically check in with myself and go, am I at where I want to be at? And am I okay with still doing this? I think was really empowering for me as a player and as a person. And I think would be great for everybody to just kind of have that little bit of reflection so that you're not having the internal struggle in the moment, that you've, like, already gone over that. And so you can just kind of be focused on what you're doing.
So you talked about kind of that pre-activity conversation, or, like, even pre-season of, like, am I all in here? And then you mentioned just like decoupling, you know, your reaction from, you know, not, you don't have to acknowledge pain. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require it. What else, you know, would you focus on to get the most of your abilities when you weren't physically where you wanted to be? And you also mentioned visualization as part of that. Is mm-hmm. there anything else that helped you? Basically, like, I feel like a one, but I'm going to play like a 10.
Yeah.
What helped you get there?
I mean, the first thing is just committing to it, like walking into the gym and going, I'm going to, you know, bring my best. Like I said at the start, I'm going to bring my best, and I'm going to give my teammates everything that I would on my best day. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like that was the biggest question for any athlete, is not how good can you be on your best day? How good can you be on your worst?
Yeah.
And so I think I took pride and really committed to that. And I had to, partly because if you could see on my face, or, you know, in my activity, how I actually felt on any given day, like, it would not be great. I would not be allowed to be an athlete. So I think it was just, you know, part of kind of that training, but, I think that was the first thing, is just kind of committing to it. And then those kind of skills of resilience I talked about, like, can you learn how to focus, you know, really deeply on the thing that you're doing? If I'm in practice, then it doesn't matter how much it hurts. And by the way, like, there's times when you're injured and you should stop, right? Like, I don't want to say that you shouldn't. Like, yeah. I have a very specific condition in which, like, there is just increased pain. I'm not causing structural damage. So the only question is, like, how much can I take? And so for me, it was like, no matter whatever is happening, I'm going to focus on the flight of this ball and how I'm going to pass it. I'm going to focus on the person next to me. And as long as what I found as I, you know, trained that kind of muscle, which is what you're doing when you do it in small pieces, was I can do that for as long as this practice goes. And I'm going to be exhausted later. Like I said, I need to shut it down after practice. I'm going to go back and just like pass out on my bed. But for these 2 hours, this is what I'm doing and nothing else matters. So I think, you know, that ability to focus on those tasks and the people around you is really important. And then the other skill I would say that's just really, really big is just gratitude. Like on my worst day, if you asked me how I felt about my life, I would tell you that it's amazing. Like mid breakdown in a ton of pain, because it is. And that's kind of what I said about resilience at the beginning. Like, can you love the moment? I loved every minute of Stanford and the national team. It was so great. And it also hurt really bad. And those things can be true at the same time. And so I think having the ability to recognize that at any given moment, there could be something bad happening. And there's also, you know, probably 10 to 100 good things happening. And keeping that perspective is really important.
That's really cool. That idea that pain and beauty are coexisting.
Yeah.
And they can be there together at the same time.
For coaches who may have an athlete who's, you know, not going to cause further injury, but, you know, playing with some pain, do you have any advice? I'm picturing like two scenarios, like, you know, maybe the opposite ends of like really babying someone or ignoring it. You know, do you have advice on how to kind of work with an athlete who's in that situation?
Yeah, I think, I mean, listen, everybody's going to be different because right. we all have different pain thresholds, but I think, you know, when you're in a situation where it's okay to push it, like, I think you just do it little by little. Go, how much can you do? You know, could you, if you can't, you know, go out and do a full practice, could you go out and pass some balls? Could you play some defense? Could you, maybe you can't fully jump, but could you stand and hit or like jump a little bit? Like, I think there's, you know, progressions to it and it's going to be how much you get comfortable with. But like I said, I started with walking and for a long time I wasn't walking. And so once you learn to push that, like learning how to push the limit is a skill, because it's scary when you walk, when you think you're at the edge and you don't want to step off of it. And then if you step off and you're still on solid land, you're like, oh, maybe that's not where it was. Maybe I can go a little bit further. And it turns out the edge is like a lot farther than you thought it was, is what I found. So I think it's just encouraging them. Can you just take a step forward and we'll see. And if it's too much, okay, we'll pull back. Mm-hmm. But let's just see how far you can go.
Yeah. Yours is a pretty extreme case, but I could see in some situations where maybe I see a teammate not having to do as many reps as I do or not having to work as hard, like being like, oh, you know, why is coach giving her special treatment? I don't know, I guess, how did you work around, or did you ever feel like you had to work around that, or everyone knew like, I mean, Cassidy's going to work her butt off.
I got a lot of reps. So I was like very, like probably to a fault, like would not allow my coaches to take stuff away from me. Mm-hmm. But also felt like, you know, if I didn't want to get out of bed in the morning and stand up, that would be justified. So nobody else gets to tell me like that I'm not doing enough. Mm-hmm. Because I'm already doing something that's completely impossible. So I think that was part of it, but also like nobody was ever going to push me farther than I was going to push myself. So I think that gave me some kind of confidence in that, but a lot of it's just like who you are. You know, I'm sure you guys have had teammates who are injured and are still doing as much as they can. And you recognize that. And you have the other teammates who are injured and they're not doing as much as they can. And you recognize that, and everybody can kind of tell. And so whichever side of that you're on, I think you just, you have to, you know, accept it and then and recognize when people are going about it the right way. And if they're not, it's hard to deal with. But like I said, just kind of encouraging them to do what they can is the best, is the best place to be.
Goes back to being a good teammate. You had also mentioned visualization. Do you find it effective? Like, do you feel like it's, I mean, probably not the same as practice, but there was some transfer to maybe matches or to training. And I don't know, could you share like maybe some of your practices in visualization that people could use?
Yeah, I thought it for sure was. So in that instance, I literally stood out on a court and went, okay, here's where the other team is. Because I really wanted to work on, you know, where am I hitting the ball? And so I go, okay, this is where the block is set up and this is where the defenders are. Okay, it's an inside set. Where are the places that I can put this right now? And then I would like walk through that for a little bit, like, you know, go through my transition approach, just kind of walking through it, but thinking about in my mind, where am I going? Okay, it's an outside set. Where would I go with this ball? Where are the spots I can put it? So I think that was super effective. I actually just did, when I was playing for the pro league, I had to sit out for a weekend and I was training on top of a parking garage during that week, serving balls at the wall to myself. But then I was just standing there going, okay, I was working on passing and going, okay, this server is serving, and just thinking about kind of where she serves most of the time and then going to pass the ball. So for me, I like it better when I can move. Some people just, you know, can sit and visualize. I like it when I can be kind of up and seeing the court in my head and seeing the players in my head coming at me. That's my favorite way to do it. Mm-hmm. But that too, I mean, I went back the next week and passed well. So I thought that was effective. And like, you know, it's so easy to do it perfectly when you're visualizing it in your head to go, okay, what happens if this ball dives a little bit to the left? How would I correct for that? So not only like going through it, but imagining the different scenarios that can happen, and how you would change what you're doing rather than just like rote every time the ball is coming perfectly towards me and I'm going to, you know, do the same thing. That's not how it all works. So how do I give myself as much kind of variation within the practice as possible?
That's really cool. Yeah. I haven't thought of like the hybrid. I picture like someone with their eyes closed, visualizing in the room, but I think it's kind of like a hybrid version, and I could see how that would have more transfer to volleyball. So, and that's something, you know, if someone maybe is physically drained, you can get more reps and get more reps. That's going to help you grow. So that's great.
Yeah.
How would you say the resilience you've built has affected the sort of leader you've become?
I mean, I think a lot of it goes back to a little bit what we were saying about being a good teammate and that you have to deal with yourself first. And so I'm pretty much always okay. Like, I don't need a lot from my teammates, because I'm going to adapt and react well to the last point that happened, because I have these skills that I've developed over time. And so because I don't need a lot, I'm able to focus on my teammates and what they need. And I think that probably goes for just life too, where again, like, I'm pretty much okay. Like, whatever's going to happen, I'm going to deal with it. And so I can think to, you know, whatever's coming next, or what people around me need, and just allows me to be consistent with the people around me. They always know what they're going to get from me.
And you've had so much experience developing those kind of mental models of how to rise above. And I mean, I don't know, I kind of see that very clearly in how you've developed your website and creating this framework for people to understand those parts just in a simpler way. Because I mean, I think you've like deconstructed things so much throughout your whole life. Like, you just have such a long line of experience here. And next question is, how has that experience affected your work with kids? Like, basically, you know, taking, you said it started when you were nine.
Yeah.
Nine. So, you know, nine to, you know, you're only 21 now.
I'm 32. You can say it's okay.
So you got that period of time where, you know, now you're able to share that with children. How do you kind of give that to them?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's deconstructing it, you know, and knowing that it's going to resonate with different people in different ways, which is part of why I created Path, because a lot of people are going to hear my story and they're going to get it, and some people aren't, but they're going to understand, you know, when it's Hines Ward talking about it. So as much as we can get to the roots of these things to go, okay, what is it? What happens when you're uncomfortable? What happens when you push through that? And to put it in the sports context, which is so, which is emotional, but it's safe in the grand scheme of things, much safer than dealing with like real, you know, pain. And so how do we practice these skills in the small ways, and train them each day so that when the big things come up, we're ready for them? Because like we said, it's a muscle that you have to train. And so, you know, whether that's that aspect of leadership, of understanding the people around you, or whether it's getting through uncomfortable things, or whether it's just understanding yourself and your identity so that when it comes to it, like, I think that's the biggest thing. Like I said, when I was talking about the definition of resilience, it's not just, can you get through this moment? Can you get through this moment and still be you? Because if you can't, then you're not really getting through the moment, right? So is that identity strong enough to weather the storm, whatever it is that's going to come? And so I think all of those lessons are the critical pieces so that when it does get hard, you're ready for it.
Love it. Do you have any books or podcasts that are really high up there for you that you would throw out to people as like, these are great resources?
Apart from Coach Your Brains Out, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you can steer people away from our podcast.
I mean, Gervais' podcast, obviously, Finding Mastery. I love him and what he does. Pete Carroll and Steve Kerr did one that, I mean, I just love both of them. That's so The Flying Coach, I think, was that one?
Yep.
They're just awesome guys. So I would listen to any of them. I'm trying to think of books. There's some that are like not coaching related at all. They're just kind of organizational books that I think are cool. Like there's a book about Pixar, Creativity Inc. It's just like about building an organization. And I remember reading it when I was on the national team and just feeling like we were built on the same values of just kind of innovation and learning. But I would recommend it as just kind of building the values of your team. Those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
That's great.
Good ones. So we're recording this right before the Olympics. Can we get your predictions for the men and women?
Gold's all around, obviously.
Love it.
I'm not gonna jinx them.
We got you on the record.
I'm excited. It's been such a crazy quad, or like 5 years, I guess, that anything could happen at this Olympics. It could end tomorrow. We could get golds. Who knows? Like half of our team could be out because of COVID. Like, knock on wood, hopefully it doesn't happen. But it's just, I think out of at least the ones since I've been kind of near the national team, it's the one with kind of the most uncertainty. And so I'm hoping that, as we've been talking about, I'm hoping our teams are resilient. And I think that's going to be a huge determining factor for who comes through with some medals at the end, but obviously always hoping that it's us.
Cool. Do we call it a penta, not a quad?
I don't know. Is it like a quint? I don't know.
And then what's the next one? A try?
Try. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be quick.
That's really fast.
Yeah. Well, Cass, thank you so much for joining us and sharing so much of your story, and really just applicable ways for coaches to get better and better serve their athletes. And I think for athletes to also better serve themselves and their teammates. So really, really just a lot of gems in this episode. We appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you guys. It was great.